if you don't have the money, you have to become resourceful. The only way to become resourceful was to start building, because there's less people that actually know how to build. There's a big risk when you build. You never know if your contractor is going to leave. I never worry about my contractor leaving because I am the contractor.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, welcome, buddy, to the Real Grit. I'm here with my friend, Jose Velni. He hails out of Boston, Massachusetts. He is a Marine. Thanks for your service, my friend. And he's got really deep background and experience in construction. He is, in fact, one of my oldest friends who I've in industry, that is. We met years back at a conference out in Boston, his backyard, and hit it off, been friends ever since. So I'm excited to have him here. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Maybe give everybody, let's start here. Just give us a little more background about you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I grew up in Boston in Somerville area, and which is right outside of Boston. I currently am in Boston, and that's really my market. I have my market's about 6 mile radius, but I actually started my professional career as a Marine. You know, 5 years in the Marine Corps, 3 combat tours, 2 in Iraq, and then 1 on ship chasing pirates with the Navy. End up detaining 32 pirates while we're out on the coast of Africa. From there, I joined the fire department, did 12 years, retired as a fire lieutenant, and now I'm a full-time real estate investor, developer, contractor. So what my company focuses on right now is we kind of have 2 different companies. We have Winter Hill Homes, which is really my construction company. And I also have Velni Development, which I'm growing it at this time, which is really a development company. So basically, as you know, Boston's an expensive market. Yeah, so what we're trying to do is, instead of looking for houses that are already there and that we can just rehab it, we're just going to build it ground up, because that's
create inventory.
Correct. We're going to create inventory. We're going to help the city by increasing the taxes, but also we're going to increase the rental portfolio. So that's really our niche. That's really our focus. We obviously do some of them. We do sell, but for the most part, we try to keep everything in-house.
Okay. And so the intent there is to build it up from the ground. And what I heard you say is the construction side of things and also the development side. So your goal there is to do the whole kit and caboodle, if you will.
Correct. So the way I look at it is the first hat that I have on is my development hat. That's when I'm doing the analyst. That's when I'm trying to figure out, hey, is this a really a good project? Once I figure that out, I say, okay, what is the best use of this? You know, what will the city let me build? Because in the city of Boston, you need a variance pretty much for any project. I think 80% of the projects have to go through zoning. So that's my development hack, getting it through zoning, getting all that stuff to designing it with the architect. Yeah. And then from there, I take that hat off and I put on my construction hat. Yeah. And then I act as my own construction management company.
When you say 80% of the projects go through zoning, what you mean by that is 80% need a variance.
Correct.
Yeah. They're just not going to fit. Yeah. Can you give us an example of a project you either have done or are working on?
Yeah, there's a few projects that I'm currently working on right now. We have a 7-unit project we just started a couple months ago. And that project was basically, it was a 2-family. And by right, we believed that we could get 5 units without going through zoning, without any triggering any variances. But we said, you know, the best use is to aim for 9, and the city approved 7. So that's what we're going to build. We're going to build 7 and sell them all as condos. That one, it's going to be a great project. It's a great design. I don't like building boxes. I don't like just a square box. It's not sexy. It's not intriguing. And I feel like, you know, as developers and as contractors, we're really putting, you know, a lot of effort into this. And I want it to last, you know, 20, 30 years from now. They're like, wow, look at the vision that they had for this design. It's not just a box that just bringing rental income or bringing some kind of income through selling them as condos. You know, the passion for me is definitely try to keep as much as I can. my passion project right now is my father-in-law owns a three family on a street called Forest Street in Roxbury. Without me knowing, I actually bought a three family on the same street. And then after that, I purchased a two family three doors down. And that two family also has a big backyard. So I'm actually going through zoning right now to get approved to build three more units on that piece of land. And then after that, I'm going to turn around. My father-in-law should retire within about 2-3 years. Yeah. And we're going to build another three more units on his property. So on that one street between my father-in-law and I, we will have 15 units on that one street. So that's really my passion of just trying to grow it out, especially on that street and also in that neighborhood.
Wow. That sounds incredible. The ones that you're going to, the seven project that you're doing, they're going to be condos and sold off. What will roughly, what's going to be the average price point on the sale per unit?
About 500,000 is usually our, it's always a moving target. We say, okay, 500, by the time we're done building, the market moves up again and it might be 510 or 520. It's just, supply and demand, and we don't have enough supply in Boston right now.
Yeah. The market's been just incredible from a pricing standpoint. Yeah. Well, hey, I'm going to pivot a little. Tell me, as a child, who had the greatest single influence in your life?
I would say my father. My father had a great big influence on me. That's where I always say I get my work ethics from my father, and I get my passion from my mother, because my mother, anytime she dived into something, she put everything she has in. But my father was that, like, hey, if I need to work 60 hours or I need to work 80 hours this week, I'm going to get it done. And that's really his motto, his whole life, as long as I've known him. And, it's interesting because when I retired from the Marine Corps, I was about 23, 24, was really when I actually got to know my father. Because my whole childhood, he was just working and providing to put us in a better position to succeed.
Yeah. How many siblings do you have? I know one of your brothers, or maybe that's your only one.
Correct. Jocelyn. Yes. Jocelyn. Yeah. No, I have six brothers and two sisters.
Wow. So we have big family. Yeah.
We have a big family. So I was adopted after the age of 5. So that's why, my parents already had children, and then they adopted a few more.
Wow. Okay. That's great. Tell me about your team. What's your team structure look like?
Right now, my team consists of myself, and I have an executive assistant, and it's just us. We really control everything. We have a lot of subcontractors, so I have a lot of relationships. So basically, the way that we're operating and growing out my team is she's really handling the property management side of the business.
Sure.
And I'm giving her more responsibility. So she handles that. And it gives me the opportunity to be more the general contractor and also the developer. So she's taking a lot of that stuff off my plate. As far as, she's also getting her real estate license.
Yeah.
Because I prefer not to do too many rentals. And I always pass those leads on. And I said, hey, if you get your license, you can take those leads.
Fill the rentals is what you're saying.
Yeah. Exactly. And for other people too, I have I have a carrot website, and it's not uncommon for somebody to reach out and say, hey, I seen your website, can you rent this property for me? And unfortunately, majority of the time, I just pass it on to other agents instead of keeping it in-house. So I'm literally losing a stream of income just because that's not my focus. But I know that though I'm losing money on that end, it's actually saving me money, because I want to focus on the construction. I want to focus on development, and that's my best use of what I'm doing right now.
Of your skill set, of your talent. You need to focus on that ROT, the return of time, right? Or return on time. What's your input of time, and what are you going to get back in dollars and cents?
Correct. And I'll give you a good example of that too. When we talked about the three units that I'm going to build on the two family that I recently purchased. I mean, I used so many different hats through that transaction. I was my own agent. I purchased it, and when I actually refinanced the three family that's three doors down to get the money to put a down payment. So I actually walked away from the table with $20,000 through that acquisition. Mm-hmm. And then from there, now I have my development. Well, I put on my property management side, got the one vacant unit rented. And then I put on my development side, started working with my architect, because what a lot of people don't realize is that's the time that you're going to save a lot of money by the way you design a project. I have seen projects that they try to sell it off to me after the fact. And I'm like, I can't buy this at this price because the way you guys designed it would just cost too much. And I'll give you just a quick example of that is by code. If you have more than three or more units, you have to put sprinkler systems.
Got to sprinkle. Yep.
But also the code also says if you're going to put sprinkler systems in, you technically don't need a rare egress. And I've seen projects that they still add that in. And I'm like, that's 20 to 30% of the footprint of your building that we still have to build out, which is costing us money that, you know, we could use it on other things like, you know, improving the kitchen, the upgrading the cabinets or the bathroom.
That things that will actually get you more dollars or return.
Exactly. And give people better comfort of where they're living. It's not a safety issue because, you know, obviously the architects already designed it and they bring it to so many labs to figure out, you know, if you do have a sprinkler system, you really do not need that rare egress. Cause more than likely those sprinkler systems, you know, with my firefighter background, those sprinkler systems are going to put the fire out before the firefighters even get there.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place, batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batchleads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT. For 50% off your first month.
Sure.
Wow. Tell everybody, maybe share a little bit about how you've gotten, because there's going from a wholesaler or a fix and flipper doing project management to doing what you do is a dramatic shift. It's a leap. And it takes, it's taken a lot of time, energy, effort on your part from educating yourself and going to be formally educated. Tell everybody what you've gone through to get, you know, to being, you know, from a fix and flipper, a wholesaler, or a person who's holding assets, rentals, to where you're at now from a full-blown development standpoint.
Yeah, that's a great question because a lot of people don't realize it. Nobody really jumps in and says, I'm going to be a developer. Like most colleges don't even teach that. You know, most colleges don't even teach construction. Mm-hmm. But what you find is you usually have a background that comes in either like myself, I'm very strong on the construction side. I was a real estate agent where I worked for one of the number one teams in my area. So I understood what those developers wanted. So that kind of gave me some insight to how to do that. But I think it takes like at least, you know, you got to have a good background, at least 10 years of experience of somewhere in the real estate industry to really dive in deep and understand it. And the way a lot of guys do come from the finance side too, because financing is a huge, huge section of, sure, of getting things developed. And development's really a team sport. So you don't need to have all the skill sets. You just need to have a great team and put it together. But my strong point is understanding the construction side. And that's one thing that I've been looking to actually continue to improve purposely. You know, I'm in a program right now with Clark Construction, one of the biggest construction companies in the country. And they pretty much teaching minority construction companies, you know, how to build out your construction side. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not looking to really focus on building out my construction capabilities. I'm looking to focus on using my construction capabilities to improve my development. But just being around so many contractors and understanding layouts and understanding different parts of that definitely helped me make that leap. But it's what you just said. It's a leap. You know, you just gotta dive in and you gotta find good mentors. You know, I had one mentor. I brought him value by, you know, bringing him a deal. On that deal, I made a wholesale deal, really. I made $50,000, and he made roughly about $250,000. So once I brought that value, he wanted me around more, you know. And then I was able to ask more questions. And then it turned into, okay, how do I solve more of his problems? And the more problems I've solved for him, the more information that he gave me. And it also became that relationship of understanding what my goals were too. And you could tell in his voice when he says stuff like, when you do your own projects, this is what you need to look for. This is the mistakes that I made early on. So that also gave me a boost of confidence to venture off on my own and really dive in deep. I say by graduating from Wentworth Institute of Technology, where I graduated my bachelor's degree in construction management, I really had a good foundation of understand how things were supposed to be built, you know, from a standpoint of 2 and 3 units to all the way up to my senior project, which was 17 units. So from there, it was just, okay, now let's apply it in the field. And now that I have the field experience and able to connect the two with the field experience and the educational background, it really bridged me becoming a better developer and continue to improve.
Yeah. I want to understand. You started somewhere in the wholesale realtor end of the spectrum, right?
No, I would say more so I started off as actually just a real estate investor.
Buy and hold.
So I was trying to figure out ways that I could utilize, you know, first time home buyers programs to acquire a few more assets. And then obviously, you know, you hit a roadblock with that because now you're
only be a first time home buyer so many times.
Exactly. I pretty much maxed it out. So
but it's after his, that, it's his fifth time buying his first house.
Yeah. One hell of a strategy, right?
Yeah.
And from there, you know, I actually started buying in Western Mass, Springfield, Massachusetts, and the real estate was a lot cheaper than the Boston areas. And I built it out to 30 units. And since I sold them all, but the knowledge that I learned from there was where I learned how to become a property manager. So that's one reason why today I'm able to keep it in-house because I worked for a bigger firm that was their focus. Yeah. But I understood that was not my end goal.
Yeah.
And eventually I was going to have to learn the other side of the business. That was like the boots on the ground. You know, you're getting dirty. You got boilers that are not operating. You got no heat pumps. And then so from there, when I joined the Steve Bremen's team in Somerville, you know, we were selling $1 million condos like cupcakes. So it was a different ballgame. You know, no more dirty boots. You got to have custom suits. You know, if you don't have the guy in the living room measuring you, you're in the wrong business.
From dirty boots to custom suits.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I learned from there. And then, you know, so I built a little more confidence and I said, you know, I'm going to start doing some projects. And yeah. I had to fire a contract because the project went horrible. We went over budget. We went longer than the project should have took. And just from that alone, I was like, I need to get educated. And that's when I decided to go back to college for construction and really, really hone in my skills and understand it.
Yeah.
From that point of view.
So the end game, you started with the end in mind. The goal was to acquire assets to have a passive cash flow. And now you're at a point where given the nature of the market, there is not a lot of inventory sitting around waiting to be purchased. So instead of going and building out like somewhat on a wholesale side to go build out a deep buyer network and work to go seller direct and send postcards, call, text, whatever that may be. You've leveraged your skill set and your personal passion for construction and have gone a different route to build that inventory.
Correct. You know, it was a combination of what I like, what I enjoy, and what the market was telling me. As you know, Boston's an old city and there's a lot of old money. There's a lot of people, like you see a house and it gets bid 50,000 over asking. I'm like, I can't do that. You know, I always say that, you know, if you don't have the money, you have to become resourceful. And that's what Marines do. We become resourceful. And the only way to become resourceful was to start building because there's less people that actually know how to build. Because there's a big risk when you build. You know, you never know what you're going to get in the dirt. You never know if your contractor is going to leave. And that's one of the things that I leverage is that I never worry about my contractor leaving because I am the contractor. Right. You know, that's huge. And, you know, if I do have a subcontractor that leaves, I pull the permit. I can just keep moving. I can just get somebody else and the show keeps going. And that's really my benefit. I mean, if you think about any development project, your general contractor is taking in anywhere between, if you're lucky, 10 to anywhere at the end of 25% of whatever that building cost is. And I'm saving that, and which helps me be very competitive. And I know my numbers. And when I present that to a bank, it's easier for me to get finance for this project. Like, oh, what have you done? Well, here's my experience. Boom, boom, boom. This is where I got my degree in. This is who you can call if you need a reference. You know, you can go on my website. You can see that I'm credible. You can see my Google reviews, you know, so all those things together play a part.
Yeah. One thing you said is it's important in the development game to have a strong team. My experience is that doesn't not necessarily mean a strong team internally. Development's a little different in the sense that, you know, most, unless you're a giant firm, you're not having an in-house architect. You're not having all these team members in-house. It is about pulling people externally into that team and creating that environment for them. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. That is on point. And one thing too in Boston, and maybe similar to your area, that we find is that you have to use a certain architect in a certain neighborhood, right? You
can't,
in a certain attorney, a zoning attorney in that neighborhood too. So if you had it in-house, that makes it almost like a little bit harder to do that.
Right.
And I feel like if you want a low overhead, and it's the easiest way because you're only paying them per job.
Yeah, per project.
It's per project. So it's easier to manage it for that aspect. But I mean, if you can see like, okay, what's been approved in this neighborhood, it's probably the same architect over. And in some projects, you're like, how did this get approved? And you're like, I want to have a coffee with this guy, you know,
because
like you see some magic. You really do when it comes to that part of the business. It's a lot of politics play into it too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you were to start again, knowing what you now know, what would you have done differently?
Honestly, I wouldn't, because I think if I change anything, my road to success would have shifted.
Yeah.
Most definitely. So, and I'm very grateful for where my company is today. We'll continue to grow. We'll continue to learn, but it's just work. You know, you got to put your time in. It's kind of like that saying, how do you get abs? Everybody knows how to get abs. It just, nobody wants to do the work to get the abs, you know,
6 minute abs.
That's right. Yeah. You know, everybody knows you got to eat right. You got to exercise, but who really does put in that time? Especially when you drive on any main street and you're probably driving by three McDonald's on your way to your destination. But that's really what it is. It's just putting in the work and continue to better yourself, you know, and never think that you're done learning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to expand upon that, never think that you're done learning. You and I met at an event and we've seen each other at subsequent events. And we find ourselves, I think, in that process of you're never done learning. There's always something else. So maybe would you tell new people who, you know, they're on YouTube University, and there's nothing wrong with that because you've got to learn one way or another. You got to get your hands on the information one way or another. What would you tell them? You know, is there a point of understanding and diving in? What should they be doing? Maybe if you were to give them some advice, you know, your younger self advice from that learning perspective, what would it be?
Well, first I say, you know, I always try to go with what is the cheapest that you can get the most value for. And what that means is that you got to find a mentor. You know, you got to, and the mentor is not free. You got to bring them value. If you bring them value, they will bring value back to you. And that's really the focus, but that's the beginning. Eventually, you're going to get to a point where they're going to be like, wow, this guy is really a competitor. He executes, because there's a lot of people that give knowledge that know knowledge, but there's a small number of people that actually execute that knowledge.
That's right.
And once you get to that level, you're going to start seeing people shutting off. They're going to be like, well, I'm not going to give them as much information. That's when you know that's a signal where you need to start looking for more national, you know, networking events or meetups. And that's really what's going to take you to the next level, because now you're surrounded by like-minded individuals that are, because they're in California or Indiana, you know, they're going to give you the whole playbook.
What you're really saying is a mentor, but not in your backyard, not to where you're building product versus product and it's yours or theirs.
Correct. But at the beginning, it is a mentor. But once you get to that level and you start going to national, they're not mentors anymore. They're peers.
Peers. Yep,
right? So you're learning from each other.
Yep, absolutely right. What's the biggest personal change you've made in your life that had the largest impact on your business?
politics. Understanding politics and understanding that this game is really a game of chess, and understanding what moves you need, who do you need as a friend, who are you going to make upset if you make this move, and what territory you need to take over. Like, you need to set the tone. And I think that's the biggest shift for me. And once I understood that and really analyzed where the market is going and who's driving that market and what nationally they're looking for and what the close Boston political landscape is asking for too. And once you figure that, everything is going to solve itself.
Yeah. When you're a deal maker, you need to understand the local politics, how they impact you.
Correct. Because as a wholesaler, you don't really deal with a lot of politics. But correct. Once you get into the development side of it, there is a lot of politics that's played.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Well, hey, life's an adventure. It requires direction at the same time. Where are things headed, in the next year for you? Sounds like maybe you're really focused on the current projects you got in the pipeline.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking to level up my education. I have a few partnership programs that I'm working on the construction side, on the development side. I want to say I spend probably at least 30% at this time on education of my day. On top of that, it's just building that network. That network has grown for me. And it's almost like I'm leapfrogging that growth path because of those people. And it's like, you start thinking, like for me, like I went from doing two units to jumping on to 7 units, mm-hmm. to being invited to doing 28 units. So I have a 28 unit project that I'm going to be associating with as a developer in the spring. And that just happened just from networking and in relationships. And people like, wow, you brought value when you were working with this team for the 7 units. Would you think about doing, 28 units? I had one developer that I got introduced to, and he's asking, hey, would you be open to doing 200 units? And his mindset is, it takes just as much work to go through zoning and to build, seven as in 28. Obviously there's more risk because now if you mess up, 200 bathrooms, a lot different than if you mess it up 7 bathrooms. Yeah, so right. From that standpoint, it's very different, but just keep moving those numbers up. One interesting conversation I had with them, because I see the relation between what I'm doing now and where they are. Yep. And I said, well, how do you raise capital? And they said, oh, friends and family, just like us. And I go, define friends and family, because when you're talking about 200 units, that's a different sector of friends and family. And he's like, yeah, we got this person, they write a check for, X amount of $1 million. And that's really what it is. It's just adding zeros and getting comfortable growing out your portfolio, your team, your assets, your network, everything.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes. But first, a word from our sponsors. Thinking about adding people to your team now or in the next year? New and experienced investors alike are turning to the definitive book on hiring written by yours truly. It's called Unicorn Hunting for Real Estate Investment Companies, How to Easily Attract, Screen, and Land a Unicorn. It's the complete hiring funnel. This book is a step-by-step process. It includes the secret sauce for attracting more applicants than you'll ever need, the exact resources to use along with screenshots, so it's easy to follow, how to accurately compensate the role and find candidates who will work for 15 to 30% less than the average wage in your home city. P.S. No, we're not shipping the jobs overseas. How to weed out applicants, including the exact word for word my team uses in our own business. Every single email needed for the entire process, it's all included. The screening tools used when interviewing, when to make the job offer. It's so easy that 90% of the work that goes into unicorn hunting can be done by someone else or a VA. This book retails on Amazon for $49.95. But since you listen here to Real Grit, I want to say thanks. I want to give you a free copy. I just ask that you cover the shipping handling. To get your free copy, along with a few valuable bonuses I have not yet even mentioned, go to www.landaunicorn.com. That's www.landaunicorn.com right now to get your free book. Yeah. And as you take those things on, new experiences, your capacity grows, and what once seemed impossible or stressful really no longer is. It's like boiling a frog. How do you do it? Right.
Exactly.
Slowly, and then you just grow. And before you know it, you're building 28 units.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, I don't know if you ever heard of Dan Pena. He's a hardcore oil man. And I read his book, and it's been phenomenal. Like the stuff that he preaches, talking about like building out your team, like your board of advisors. That's one thing that I really focus on, having a good board of advisors that can advise me on different things, that have strengths in their own topics where others won't. And just being able to bounce things off other people has really grown my growth path of understanding, okay, this is how I get from A to Z, because they have done it. They already made all the mistakes, you know, and sometimes you don't even know what resources are around you. I had my first mentor when I was 14 years old, and he's still my mentor today, and he was like a life mentor. And it was funny because I never wanted to be a developer because he was a developer, right? And I never wanted to be judged or compared to him because it was already starting to happen at a young age.
Yeah.
And it just happened and just fell into place. It's like sometimes you go against the grain, but you're not going the right path. You're not going the natural path. Like just like if you put water in a house, the water is going to go where the water is supposed to go.
That's right.
I felt like that's what happened to me.
Be like water. Jackie Chan said that.
I think that was Bruce Lee, but yes.
Thank you. You had it. I totally got that. It is Bruce Lee. It is. I stand corrected. Hey, let's move into our final segment, what I call four impact.
Four for impact.
All right. So your favorite quote, warriors are warriors and do not concern themselves with anything less than war. Who said it?
It's Sun Tzu. I believe it's warriors are warriors and should concern themselves with nothing less than war. And the reason why I like that quote is it really gives you focus on, if you find anybody that's great at what they do, that's really what they focus on. And, you know, it's not like, okay, let me put my eggs in 8 baskets. No, I'm putting my eggs in one basket and I'm going to be the best at that one thing. This is my niche and I'm going to dominate it. I want to grow to the point, even what I'm doing now in Boston, that when somebody thinks about, you know, development in Boston, I want my name to come up.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're hitting that target.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Where focus goes, energy flows, right?
Exactly.
Jackie Chan did not say that. what do you think holds most investors back?
I think it depends where you come from, but I think most of it is education. Mm-hmm. You know, education and courage. You know, you need education so you can make wise decisions, but you also need courage to actually jump.
To act, because there you can take all the information in and then just be paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember, you know, not too long ago, I retired from the fire department, and it was a lot of hard work to make it to the rank of lieutenant. And people like, you're retiring. They made it sound like I was jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. You know what I mean? It's like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would you do this? And I knew that wasn't my path, and I knew that wasn't my vision for what I wanted for me and my family. And so I jumped. And I had some people too that gave me great advice, and they were like, hey, I don't think you should do this. And my question to them is, well, if I do this, will you help me? And they were like, absolutely. You know, so that made it a lot easier too, because, you know, they give you that advice because they love you, right? They don't want to see you suffer or to go through any heartaches or pain. But at the same time, they know it's not their decision to make. And once you make that decision, they're all in with you. So that also helps too, having that foundation, that background.
Yeah. Yeah. Outside of real estate, what are you passionate about?
That's a good question. I only have one basket. It is real estate. Honestly, right now, you know, because of my business is growing, it's really all I have the time to do. You know, obviously I love giving back to my community in any way. If it's talking at events, I've been fortunate enough to talk about my alma mater, you know, talking to the people coming up in the real estate industry, the commercial real estate industry, as far as the construction side and the development side, you know, so that has been a passion, you know, getting my story out there through like podcasts and stuff like this is because, you know, one thing about me, I make decisions, but these decisions I made like years ago. When I was in the military, I would never talk about politics, who I think who should be president or vice versa. When I was in the fire department, it was very similar, to the point that even though I've been in real estate through my whole pretty much fire career, I never did podcasts until recently. And it felt like, you know, my mission was whatever the fire department needed and keeping that the mission. Mm-hmm. And now my mission is to grow out my company. So that's what I've been really been focused on. So I would say my biggest passion is giving back to other people. You'd be surprised how many people's like, hey, you want to grab some coffee or you want to do this? Or I just want to pick your brain on something, you know? And my wife is like, hey, you got to start charging them because they're taking up my time. You know?
At least let me get some shoes or a purse or you know, a weekend away out of this.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, you answered my fourth question. I was going to ask, what's your favorite way to make an impact? And it sounds like, you know, connecting, educating others and being an inspiration to those who are in the space.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it. We're really changing the landscape. Like when somebody drives by a vacant lot and now they can actually physically see a house, you know, like that you changed the street. Like Google Maps better come back and see that there's a house on there.
Right.
Like you really made an impact. And I feel like these things that we're building now are going to be here longer than I am.
Right.
You've
left your thumbprint on the city.
Exactly. If you look at the picture behind me, Frank Lloyd Wright, right? Everybody knows who he is. He's a famous architect because of his designs.
Yep.
You know, that's what we should be going for, is making an impact in that manner that when people look at your product, that's still sitting there and how great it is.
Yeah. No, that's terrific. Well, you're an inspiration. It's fun to hear everything you've gone through, especially coming through serving this country, which I'm appreciative of. And then your full-time work at the fire department too, for how many years was that?
12 years.
12 years full-time in the real estate on the side, educating, chipping away, going to school.
Yeah. I remember my last semester, it was during COVID. And I told my wife, I said, listen, I want to get this done. I wanted permission to just work, dive in deep and work. So I was putting like 40, 45 hours in the fire department, another 40, 45 hours in school. And I still graduated with honors, you know, so it's just been amazing that, you know, that has helped me. And one thing I will say to any younger investors, you know, coming into this game is if your spouse is not on board with your vision, it's probably not going to work.
One of the two isn't going to work, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's one way to say it.
Well, it's going to break one way or another, right? Yeah.
Something got to give.
You're right. And that's something that we don't have to talk about, especially, you know, you're interesting in the sense that, what have you been married now? 2 years, maybe a little less?
Yeah, 2 years, about a year and a half, 2 years. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, you were already in the real estate space. You were already coming through this before getting married. And so you dated through that and probably had to share and get on the same page in order to get to a marriage, right?
Yeah, no.
But know honestly, that there was support before the wedding, the wedding day, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was very fortunate that my father-in-law, though he's not as aggressive as I am in the real estate industry, he's an old school real estate investor. Mm-hmm. So she kind of grew up in that surrounding anyway. So, and she kind of knew my vision to the point, like, I just think creatively, like I sit there and I'm like, okay, how do I move this piece? How did this affect this? To the point, I remember I could tell she wanted to settle down and I'm like, I'm a real estate investor. I don't got time for this. I have to buy more real estate. But what I was able to do is convince her how to refinance the house that she currently owned. Yeah. And then we were going to go look for another one. And we use, again, first-time home buyers, one of my favorite strategies. And I was her broker, so I made the commission. I was able to purchase her ring through that transaction.
So you convinced her to refi the house that she owned, buy a home as a first-time home buyer, and then get the commission and buy a killer ring.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. And with the one that she refinanced, was that Tornado rental, or did you guys eventually sell that one?
Correct. No, it's a rental.
It's a rental.
Yeah. Building out the rental portfolio by any means necessary.
Yeah. No, that's terrific. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to connect up here and share your story, your information with folks here. Tell me if somebody wants to connect with you, they want to follow you, where can they find you online?
Honestly, I'm everywhere. I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn, but mostly Instagram. I like Instagram. You know, I'm a big marketer. I think if anybody in the real estate industry, you have to be a big marketer. And it's interesting to see how people engage differently on different platforms. Mm-hmm. But I would say definitely Instagram is one of my favorites. It's like, how do I put this cool picture of this or that? And it affects how people think about it. I would say one of my best marketing strategies was actually Instagram, because as I was building a house, yeah, I used to just post my updates. So it was like, well, there's a hole in the ground. Oh, there's a first floor. Oh, there's a second floor. And like people were like living through the process through my pictures. Yeah. And a lot of people say, hey, I got this house. You want to come look at this land? Yeah. So it actually brought me a lot of leads just from documenting the process of how to build a house.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, we'll drop the links to Jose here in the show notes. I appreciate you taking the time to connect here, buddy.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. I'll see you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.